Workshopping, sixth of the dusk.
Critiquing Brandon's story. I'm Brandon.
I'm Dan.
I'm Mary.
I'm Howard.
We are going to be doing a critique of my story, Sixth of the Dusk, which is the psychic bird story that we brainstormed about a year ago. What they have read here is the unedited version, because right now I haven't done the edited version. I'm just assuming I'm going to, and it's going to be awesome. The other thing that I'm going to do is we're going to run this like I run my writing group. So in my writing group, the thing we do is we start off talking just briefly about what's working in the story, so that the author doesn't accidentally go take that out, doesn't screw it up. We talk about what's good, what's fun, what's what we enjoyed. Then we go on to large-scale problems and talk about big issues that that we think the story just... That are big problems. And from there, we talk about some more medium-level issues. So let's start off, Sixth of the Dusk. What did you guys like?
Well, I thought the world-building was a lot of fun. It made sense. It was compelling. The journey across the island was tense, and you managed the geography, I thought, quite well. The characters were distinct and consistent. And the prose was serviceable.
Okay.
Which I wouldn't say to anyone normally, but
yes, this is one of my first drafts. And if my first drafts have a weakness, it is the prose. The prose is, yeah. Anyway,
actually, the way you had described the prose, I was expecting it to be awful, and it's just
wordy. And each sentence could be a little tighter, yeah. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked the details in it, in particular about not just, you know, you don't just tell us the main character is a trapper, but you actually show us and have invented all of this terminology for the animals and the plants and the tricks that he uses and the culture that he's from. It's very well developed and really pulls you into the story.
I liked the, First of all, I enjoyed the whole, you know, the whole story, beginning, middle, end. I thought that the plot structure worked, the shape, the emotional arc of things shaped right, was shaped right. The reveals felt like they were, for the most part, in the right places. The thing that it struck me the most, that I think I liked the most, was the subverting of the noble savage trope. Your trapper recognizes that metal tools and pants are superior to what his people have been using for a long time, and so he's just fine with metal tools and trousers and boots and these things. And I liked that.
Now, what I did here is I wrote all of this down with the name of the person who said it, because usually when I'm going to do a revision, I'm going to set this aside for a while, and I'll come back, and I want to know kind of the context, know who said what. This is because I know my writing group, and I know sometimes to pay a better attention if someone I know is specialized in a certain thing, they do a really good job with it. Like Howard talks about, this is where your humor was working. I'm like, okay, I need to look at that and see what was I doing that actually made Howard laugh, you know, something like that. Now we'll move on to the large-scale problems.
I have one more thing that I wanted to say before we leave the good stuff.
Yes.
Is just that I was, and this is a minor note, and I know this was your intention the whole time, but it's worth pointing out that you successfully wrote a very unique world. I mean, fantasies set in jungles are few and far between, and so this stands out just because of that.
Okay.
Yeah, and you did manage to make psychic birds make sense. Mm-hmm. So kudos for that.
All right. Big issues. And in my writing group, it's not person taking a turn. Just throw out, and then I encourage everyone to have a conversation about what they felt about that.
Does the dude's name count as a big issue?
It sure can.
Yeah.
If it's big to you, it counts.
It was not by any means the biggest problem in the story, but sixth, that is a really hard word to say, and it was really getting on my nerves by the end. I was wishing he had an older brother so he could be seventh, just because that's easier
because,
to say.
Because then he's seventh of nine, which was the thing that triggered for me at the beginning. Mm.
See, the problem I had is that...
fifth, though.
You
fifth
are going to fourth, have...
Because then you don't have a... Sorry.
You're going to have a whole pile of... Just statistically speaking, you're going to have... Every other child is going to be named either first or second. which just seemed.
But that was weird. Cool. I'm willing to accept that's naming convention.
That's not unusual. I mean,
How many Jasons do we have at this retreat?
It's not even that. It's like that's the way they were doing things in Rome. That's the way they were do things in China, that people go by, you know, their birth order.
That's a fair cop. If the first name is more like a surname, they don't have surnames. So many of you are going to be first, second, or third that it seems to me that what would actually be differentiating you is what comes later, which for him is dusk, which turns out to not be time of day.
You know, a triple consonant cluster, when it gets possessive, it's a quadruple consonant cluster, was just hard for me to say every time.
Got it.
But we'll move on.
So you're ending.
Oh, dear.
Basically, what I feel like is going on is that you've got, and you did ask about it specifically, but you've got basically a triple ending going on. And the reason I think that's happening, so you've got the thing where they defeat the monster, which is not really the ending because that's an internal event. The bigger event that they have to solve is the stopping of the
machine.
The machine.
The mapping machine.
Which they do, and then he leaves and goes out off to sea, and then he comes back. And then they go away. So the leaving and going off to sea was a second ending, and then the going out into space is your third ending. I think. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a couple of things going on besides that. One is that you need to combine all of those that you only end once. And because
I'm not sure I agree with that, but keep going.
I think he needs to wrap up all of the problems, but I think the going away and coming back is currently not working.
So you're saying not the defeat the monster, but the other endings.
Right. No, the defeat the monster I don't count as an ending. Mm-hmm. That's...
But the ones you're saying combined is stop the machine, go away, then come back.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, the going away worked in a sense. It's obviously in there because you knew that you needed to separate those two endings in some way. So, combining them is one solution, or just giving him a reason to come back, which is absent in this story. I think if he leaves, I liked having the breather to go out and look at the island, and, you know, look at his father, and then come back. But there wasn't anything bringing him back, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think and this is where I was going to head with the very, very end, with his decision to come back and go, and then go into space, is that at the beginning of the story, he is not dissatisfied with his life. You know, there's he has a life that he likes. He feels like he's good at his job, and yes, the job is changing. But there's nothing about his life that indicates that he's lonely or that he wants to leave. And you end with him taking her hand, which symbolizes a connection with someone else. And there's nothing about the way his life is structured that indicates that the fact that he is not connecting with other people is a problem. None of that seems to be an issue for him. So I think if you want to keep that part of it, that you have to go back to the beginning and insert something so that he is somewhat dissatisfied. If we're using the classic my structure,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Right now you have basically milieu story, and then you have an event. And then you wrap up the event, and you wrap up the milieu, and then you suddenly have this character ending. And it's like, hello, where did this come from? And then he goes away, which resolves the I am not satisfied with my status, or my position in life. And also you have introduced, there's two disruptions to the status quo. One is the what is happening to the birds. Which represents the larger disruption. So there's that, and then there's also that we have space aliens coming down to visit us. Those are both related things. Right now you have them as two separate things with the way the ending is structured. So I think that you would have a stronger emotional punch if you could find a way to either have him come to that decision at the end after the after they defeat. I also like him going back out to sea, but I don't think it's working.
It's not. And so he either needs to go, like I said, he needs to go out to sea and then have a compelling reason, something that drives him back, or there needs to be, we need to remove the need for him to go out to sea.
Yeah. And I think that you could remove the need for him to go back to sea. I mean, if we're looking at the classic, you know, milieu structure, the story starts when a character enters a place or leaves a place and, you know. Mm-hmm. We could count the entrance into the fortress as the exiting from the island. You know, that he arrives on the island with his on his boat, but he is leaving via another door. And that could count if you go back to the beginning and add in some character stuff.
Or just having him get onto their other boat, their big iron boat.
Yeah, and watch
coming on a little canoe and leaving on the big iron boat solves that very subtle problem. But we keep interrupting Howard.
Well, I just wanted to say one thing about that, and then we can Howard talk.
We're going to continue interrupting Howard.
Yes, I am, because that's my job.
This is Mary's expertise, so I'm kind of willing to let Mary just talk.
That's hilarious. But I just wanted to second what Dan said, in particular because putting him on the iron boat allows you to have that looking back at the island, and that is a really strong image.
Yeah. I actually had a process question.
Just joking.
I had a process question. I'll be blunt. Dan and Mary are fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the sort of critique that you're accustomed to getting?
Oh, that's a good question. From my writing group, and particularly from Dan, I always want Dan to fix my story. Okay. Now, here's the thing. This may be a bad example for you all, because I'm sitting with two of the authors I respect most in the world, and with Howard.
That's just fine.
Dan and I know each other really well.
Yeah.
We have been workshopping together forever, and we know each other's stories. And in some cases, this can be a bad thing in that, you know, since we know what the other's trying for, sometimes you get into trouble where since Dan knows my writing so well, he'll miss things that are wrong because he just assumes he knows what I was trying for and he's right.
Yeah.
But a really good critiquer can dig into this is the problem and here are ways to fix it. Now, you may not take those ways, and I'm an experienced critiquee. It's okay. I'm an experienced critiquee, and I know when to not... You're snickering at that. I know when to not take advice and when to take it. And so allowing two really good writers to go back and forth on what's wrong with my writing and what to fix it, I'm perfectly willing to let happen. In fact, I'm excited by it. But a lot of new workshoppers, I suggest them not do this, that they describe their emotions and not give you fixes.
And I'm going to second you on that.
Yeah.
If I were critiquing someone else, I would not be offering the prescription.
Because I'm actively soliciting help, which is a different thing also.
One of the things that I think failed with this ending is that while I could feel the presence of the various emotional threads, those various pieces, they didn't all hit close enough together. And I think that's a good way to sum up what Mary said last week, is that, you know, we weren't... all of these things kind of needed to happen, but they needed to happen closer. Outside the Hollywood formula, the two biggest problems I had is that I wanted clues, I wanted some foreshadowing with regard to dusk a little bit earlier. That was a neat reveal. I liked that, but when by the end of the story we realized that he's kind of mulling over his name as a foretelling, I thought maybe he should have been mulling over his name as a foretelling earlier. And maybe that's the discontent that he's feeling that Mary suggested. And the second issue is that I think we were almost halfway through the story before we mentioned that they had made contact with people from the stars, and that needed to drop a little bit sooner.
That needed to at least be hinted at earlier. I don't mind the revelation coming where it does.
Oh, the revelation was awesome.
But I was not prepared for it.
Yeah.
Yep. Ditto that.
All right.
I said
it's actually
smart
on
things.
Page two. Yes. But
it's on page two?
It is on page two.
Well, obviously none of us saw it.
Yeah. All right, I'm flipping
and
to page two.
If you feel the need
gonna...
to defend your story, that means it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Here's my thing. This is actually even more so than the ending. This is what this was my biggest problem with the
Where
story.
Where is that on page two? That is so
search
not
for
on page
ones above. There's
ones above.
Oh, please.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Sixth gives away so much information for no reason that I could discern. He focuses so heavily on the fact that he doesn't like talking. That this woman talks too much, and then he just cannot stop himself from spilling every secret he knows, and he doesn't get anything out of it. He's not trying to get anything from her. It felt very weird to me, like he was just, you know, the plot engine would take over, and it's like, oh, it's, we need to know another secret now, so he's just going to tell us.
Yeah, I had some issues with that. I felt like a lot of his motivation for why he was telling her that people already know this and it's going to come out. And I felt like usually there was motivation behind that I could accept it. But there were a couple of places where I'm like, why are you telling her this?
See, and if that's his motivation, I think it would need to be accompanied by his reaction.
Yeah.
You know, not just an acceptance, but some form of guilt or betrayal or whatever. Yeah. And that was there a little bit, but not enough to sell it.
Yeah, and also I think that if that had been present in the beginning when I was talking about needing some form of him being dissatisfied with life, if he was doing some of that in the beginning before he even meets her, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, maybe there's some form of, if they've got steam, you know, they've got probably newspapers or something that, you know, some article had been published and he's like, people are starting to talk about stuff that has traditionally been kept between us. And also, ones above is not until page 22.
Okay, maybe I'll just...
I could not find it on page two.
Okay.
So the seeds
22
are
22 of
there.
75.
That's like page two for a shorter story.
It's got two twos
of
in it.
Seven.
The seeds are there for him to have this kind of letting go of the past aspect.
Yeah.
You know, we're planting early on that he's wearing kind of more modern clothes. He has a compass. He has the little scuba mask that he talks about. But he completely accepts that, whereas Brandon knows what I mean at this point.
Brandon, what does Dan mean?
Dan means that he doesn't like the story.
No,
he's talking about the... Well, I try to avoid talking too much, but he's talking about the idea he's accepting all of these things, but is there any regret? Is there any sense of loss? I mean, he's just moving along with it, and is that a wasted opportunity or not?
Yeah, and I completely agree with that, and I think that if you can give us hints of that in the beginning, that will inform a lot of the decisions he makes later.
The other thing that I wanted to say, the other seed that is being sown there, is that he, by bringing in mainland birds, has already started to corrupt the island. And that was never brought up.
That's true.
And never addressed. And could, if that's a direction you decide to go, solve some of this problem, that he's already party to the corruption of the island.
Yeah. And I thought that you dealt with that a little bit when he was all, let's kill all of the night moths. Mm-hmm. I thought that the bird he had, that Sack, was a mainland bird that had like been blown off course, that he just got lucky with that one. But you're right, he is bringing chicks in now because he's saying there will be more of these.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. And, you know, and that may be one of those things where he is not aware of the ecosystem issues that he's going to cause by doing that. And that's something she could bring up and have him... You know, make those connections.
Yeah,
that is a neat piece of symmetry. You know, the groundwork is already laid for that. Where he is worried about change. He recognizes himself as an agent of change. His name means he is an agent of change, mm-hmm. But he does not recognize the extent of the change that would occur if he does what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas she is, she is definitely an agent of change. You know, mm-hmm. she's there as part of changing things. But her mission is to change things while at the same time protecting them in a way that hasn't occurred to him. And there's a neat symmetry there.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing which, Brandon, you do a great job with in the other stuff of yours that I've read where you've had a chance to tighten up the prose. Those are the things that just naturally flow out as you're tightening up these words. You realize, oh, I need to use this word here and then this word again here. And the reader grabs that symmetry without you having to throw down a whole paragraph mm-hmm. that says, and this is what he believed.
Yep.
So. All right. Well, let's continue to it. Continue to thrash my story, everyone. What are your medium level problems? Just things that occurred to you that may not require big revision, but that bothered you.
This is a tiny thing. It's actually just a order of information flow. When it's on page 7, when you introduce the sack, the AVR usually waited until they'd landed before bestowing her blessing. And I'm like, the corpse is a vision? Because I wasn't completely clear. And then why is that a blessing? Why is the vision of a corpse a blessing? And you answer it like 2 sentences later. But because it's, you know, the 2 sentences are the black feathered bird just watched the waves and sixth continued. You're right. That is hard to say. Sixth continued his work.
You have an audiobook problem here.
Yeah. I thought you were done and I thought that I wasn't going to get the answer. And so I was confused. And I really think that it's just, you know, just moving the body he saw and the, you know, moving that little section somewhere just you know, so there's not quite that tiny buffer between would have fixed that for me, and it's a small thing.
Got it.
Yeah, medium level ish thing for me was the mechanic of, and I guess it's a mixture of things, the mechanic of the foretelling. We never get at any point a vision from Sack that tells us something that then comes true. So, I mean, he's been very careful and he's survived all of this time as a result of stuff from Sack, but I've never seen Sack do something or tell him something and then see that actual thing actually happen. Which I know wouldn't work because we're only getting his corpses.
Yeah, but what we do see is Sack give the warning and him look closer and it's like, oh yes, in fact.
Oh yes, there's a thing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like with the vines coming out of the tree.
Yeah, well, see, and that's why I'm saying it's a medium level problem. Yeah. If I could see one of those prophecies come true, I would be much more satisfied in the bird's ability. The other thing that was a little weird is the concatenation of his corpse everywhere, which
was awesome.
It was
intense?
Awesome. No, I
yeah.
liked it. It was powerful. It was awesome. But to my mind, it was never explained. I didn't understand why.
I was bothered as well by the fact that we never find out what this mapping machine is or what it's going to do to the island. But I was not super bothered by it. I don't know if I would have even brought it up had Howard not mentioned it, because it's a hole in the story, but it feels like it's an excusable hole in the story because that's not what the story's focusing
yeah,
on.
Yeah, see, I was okay with that. Where I had a problem was that, because I thought, well, why would mapping machinery do that? That doesn't make any sense. But then when Sixth says, hey, I think it's because this is a trap and it's not actually mapping machinery, it's designed to cause this disruption.
Mm-hmm. I liked that reveal a lot. That
I
was
did
cool.
too. I, but what, where my problem lay was that I didn't see his logical
yes,
steps to get
I think
to that. And because we're in his POV and we didn't see him putting those pieces together, we just saw him say, and here, let me give you this piece of exposition.
Yes. And that exposition came out of nowhere. If he arrives there by the same process you just did, mm-hmm. that would solve 2 whole different problems
yeah.
for me at the same time. Here's another problem that I maybe didn't bug anybody else, but the gun that she has, I couldn't figure out why it was a harpoon gun. And to the point that was weird enough to me that I thought, oh, it's going to be important later that it's a harpoon gun. And it is because you can't tie a flower bulb onto a bullet. And so therefore it had to be a harpoon. And that, as far as I could see, was the only reason for it to be a harpoon. I'm cool with other cultures having other kinds of guns. But this was never used in a way that would make a harpoon more valuable than a bullet.
They had the deep maw or whatever, the deep creature things that they were up against sometimes, and if you're going to shoot something like that, you do need a heavier projectile than a bullet, because a bullet won't go very far in the water. But she tried shooting at one and missed.
But I never got
work.
The sense that this was an underwater
Well, she does say that it was specifically something that they had for the shadow, and that she grabbed it when she was fleeing. But that maybe needs to be brought out a little more.
Okay.
Along these lines, since we're talking about shadow and Nightmaw and all of these things, oddly, the... you know, instead of a shark-toothed club, I was like, they have sharks on this world? And I don't know why that bothered me. Because it wouldn't have bothered me if, birds didn't bother me, horses wouldn't have bothered me, but for some reason, shark-toothed, when we have all of these other cool flora and fauna that are clearly indigenous to the world, for some reason, I'm like, why would anyone import sharks? I can understand importing birds, but why would anyone import sharks?
On a related note, but this is actually a good thing that I thought was a neat little minor touch, is you describe the shadows, the big monsters, and you never actually say that they look like Krakens or Cthulhus or whatever, but that's what I imagined in my head. But he had literally no idea how to describe it, or maybe it was the girl. And then in like the next sentence, they talk about octopi. And I'm like, well, if they know what an octopi is and they still don't know how to describe what I assumed was a kraken, it must be even weirder than I thought it was. And I thought that was a really neat moment.
I just assumed it was like a really big shark.
I was just like, it's just something bad.
You guys just don't like to imagine tentacles as much as I do.
I had...
Oh, that's not where I went.
Okay.
All right. Small, this is, again, in that medium level. This was one of the places where it's like, where I did feel like there was an inconsistency. If you had been another trapper, I would have killed you directly rather than leaving you to revenge yourself upon me. But I thought that they didn't kill each other directly. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, is that because she's at the safe camp? But because there was an allusion to the only time that they fought was
not
at the
an
safe
allusion,
camp.
But a direct reference.
Yes.
We don't hurt each other. We let the island kill each other.
Yeah.
We just help it.
Yeah, and so and it was very close to this, so I was confused. Yeah. Either cut or clarify. Let's see, what else did I have?
You're only there. You've got lots more to go.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do.
The little Meekers were awesome.
Loved the Meekers.
But I was sad that they didn't show up later.
Yes.
Because when he needs to end up, essentially, I imagined him assaulting this enemy fortress... And I thought he was going to rouse his little band of nasty little bitey mice. And instead, he just scared some panthers in the woods, and then we cut.
Yeah.
Jump cut.
Yeah. It is, there were a lot of things in here that were really cool that I love and think you could cut to make this a tighter story.
Yeah.
And the Meekers represent that one of those because you're not using them. So, use it or lose it. Have no idea where you would insert them. But since you write long, this is something that you could cut in short.
Originally, they were actually going to kill her.
Oh.
Offhandedly, because he, his paranoia was too... And he had said... But
I'm glad
I
you didn't
decided
go there.
That when I got there that was the wrong emotional beat.
Yep.
For this, and so...
Yeah.
So that's why they were put there.
You can cut them now. And use them for something else because they're great. The except I will say that one thing that they do if you are emphasizing this theme of him disrupting island ecology, they do, it is him interfering with the way things naturally work in the island.
The other thing they do is they help reinforce this idea that there is telepathy happening in nature everywhere. It's a broader sort of effect.
Yes. And, the one of the ways you could have them used is that maybe she was not the only person who escaped and that she had a companion that was killed by the Meekers. Getting back to something that Dan had said earlier about, that he just seemed to be spouting information. There was a point where he says, coming here was obviously a disaster. But the rest of the story, he's so annoyed with her saying all of these obvious things. And so the fact that he's actually using the word obviously...
That was a minor thing, but it stood out to me as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's minor, but I'm just
not just the word choice, but just how verbose he became.
Yeah.
In those two sentences.
Yeah.
Very wordy.
Yeah. Oh, this is actually something I should have mentioned in the cool stuff. There's a point where he's been using her name for a while and he gets angry at her. And for two paragraphs, he only refers to her as the woman, which was a really nice way of showing that he was like, this is, you know, she is not a person to me.